This is Birth to Work Radio.
Try to convince a community that had always felt if you had a strong back, you could always make a decent living. That disappeared, but the same people stayed in the community.
The competition is much more prepared in terms of the knowledge base and the expectations, and we have to get there very, very quickly.
The problem with education in America is a problem of trying to use a bureaucratic form to do what is basically a cultural and moral mission.
It's important for business leaders to recognize they play an important role in the vibrancy of the community.
I always felt that as a pediatrician, I was also an educator because the trust that people have in us.
We know that when parents know their children are in an academic crisis, they will move mountains.
The most important thing for parents to do is spend time in human interaction with children.
My goal as a community leader now is to create responsible, engaged citizens. I have to emulate what I want them to do.
And now, here's your hosts, Elaine V. Scott and Rick Stevens.
This is Elaine Scott, and this is Birth to Work Radio. And welcome this week to David Valladolid. Did I say that correct, David?
Yes.
Valladolid of PK, the Parent Institute for Quality Education in San Diego, California. Our conversation today is especially significant and especially poignant because it deals with a integrated view of parents, education, and a sense of equalizing an opportunity that has taken on a life of its own in this country as we search for ways for people who do not come into using the public school system, who may have grown up in the public school system. And David's organization, the Parent Institute for Quality Education, has worked for more than 25 years to bring such quality to parents everywhere. And we're going to ask him to start out with a little bit of background about the organization and its mission and its vision. And then we're going to talk a little bit about the objectives. And we want to give our listeners a sense of what it is that they do and the quality of activities that they ask parents to be engaged in. Welcome, David, and thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you, Elaine, for this invitation to talk about the work. We've been doing it now for 22 years, actually. We started the program in 1987 in San Diego. And so we'll reach our 22nd anniversary date on October of this year.
What's important is that it began out of a sense of exactly what we call a visionary stakeholder leader. You want to tell us a little bit about how it began as part of a ministry and became part of the public school system?
Absolutely. The two principal founders of the Parent Institute, one is a Reverend Dr. Vahak Martirosyan, who had spent the last 30 years of his ministry in Los Angeles in Boyle Heights. And he, as a result of that, was present in Los Angeles during the 1968 walkouts by students who left the schools of Los Angeles because they felt they were not being educated or prepared for college education. And it was during that period that Vahak Martirosyan, or Reverend Martirosyan, tells us that he went through a personal transformation and got involved with education and spent 20-some years in L.A. working in educational issues. He was the first president or chair of the Los Angeles Hispanic Commission on Education with the Los Angeles Unified School District. And it was from that work that he thought he was coming to San Diego to retire in 1979, but he ended up landing exactly at a moment that San Diego Unified School District was getting a new superintendent, Dr. Tom Paysant, from Oregon at the time. And a group of us approached the superintendent and asked if he would allow us to have meetings with him on a monthly basis to address the crisis in education for low-income children in general and Latino children in particular and African-American children. And he welcomed that opportunity. In fact, overnight he set up four separate advisory committees, the African-American, Asian-American, Native-American, and Mexican-American advisory committees. And we all met with him once a month to discuss the issues affecting our children in the educational system. It probably shouldn't have taken us 3 or 4 years, but after about 4 years, we realized that we weren't going anywhere in terms of making significant change to address the crisis that our children continue to face academically. And it was then that Vahak Martirosyan and the second principal founder is Dr. Alberto Ochoa, a professor at San Diego State University. They both approached Dr. Superintendent Paison and asked if they could go listen to the voices and issues affecting parents. And the superintendent said, pick a school and go, and they did. They picked the lowest performing elementary school in San Diego Unified at the time, was Sherman Elementary, and they asked the principal to invite all the parents. They wanted to have a conversation with them. The principal told them, we'll invite them all, but you're only going to get about 8 or 9 that typically show up when we do a call on parents for anything in the school. And true to form, about 8 or 9 parents showed up. Vahak and Alberto began the conversation with them, asking them what is happening in your home, in your community, and in your schools as it relates to your children's education or lack of. And they opened up Pandora's box. 2 hours flew by. Vahak and Alberto were thanking the parents for opening their eyes to a whole lot of new issues. And the parents said, you have to come back. You haven't heard anything yet. And so Vahak and Alberto gave the parents the challenge. You go bring other parents that have kids in the school, and we'll come back as many times as you need us to. And for the next 8 weeks, 94-plus parents sat in the auditorium and had two-hour conversations once a week with Alberto and with Dr. Martirosyan. And from those discussions, the parents then asked both Vahak and Alberto to take this process that you did with us here that gave us so much information, things we didn't know what we didn't know, and now we have been enlightened, and hopefully you have been enlightened. Take this process and do it in every school in California and beyond. And from there came the mandate by the parents, and Vahak, with his energy, with his mission-driven style of work, took it on, and he and his wife, Eunice, were the first people to develop the program. Dr. Ochoa took the 54 topic areas that were covered in the 8 or 9 weeks of discussions with the parents, and from those topic areas, he developed the first curriculum for parent engagement, parent involvement in education. And so that was what launched. Everybody was telling them, it isn't going to work. You're talking about parents that work 2 and 3 jobs. You're talking about many families that come from other countries that don't speak the language. This was a good thing you did, but it isn't going to be something you can repeat many times. And last year, or a couple years ago, as we celebrated our 20th anniversary, just in California, we had already graduated 425,000 parents from 16 different language communities had gone through the Parent Institute and learned what they needed to know and do to make the school system work for their children and to give their children the option of a college education.
I can't quite say enough about that particular description that you just gave of what you did, because what keeps running through my mind is a single thought. What I've always heard is, how do we take responsibility for what we don't know? How do we develop a proper and exemplary communication line? And how do we listen first and then teach people to act and become responsible and capable on their own? And I think that all too often in today's economy, in today's marketplace, our searches for who is at fault, who is to blame, who do we make wrong, and that has never, ever been a part of the language of the organization. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, yes. And with all the work we do with the parents and the schools, because we have had to develop a partnership with, just in California, with 160 school districts, working with over 1,600 K-12 schools, we have had to emphasize to both sides that we're not here for a blame game. The research is overwhelming that all schools need to have parents engaged and involved both at home and in the schools for our children to have a chance of obtaining a quality education and of having the option of a college education. And so our emphasis from the beginning with parents is, your job is not to wait till a problem develops in the school. On the contrary, your job is, the day your son or daughter begins attending that school is the day you begin developing friendly, positive, constructive relationships with everybody that works in that school, so that if in the future a problem does come up, it is not the first time they see you. It is they already know you, you're made friends, you will get any problem resolved. If it is the first time they see you and there's a problem at hand, you're in a difficult situation because the message that you've given them with your absence, whether it was by intent or not, is that it was not something very important to you, and that's why you didn't come before.
When we come back, I want to go a little bit further with that statement. I think that there's an interesting story behind that about Wahak, and I'm calling him by his first name. I apologize. I know him that way. What I want to talk about is what was it that first motivated him to understand or enabled him to understand that the Hispanic public, the Native American public, that these people did not have information. It wasn't that they lacked desire or skills, but there was information that they were lacking. And we'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Elaine Scott. I'm having a conversation with David Valladolidad, and we are talking about the PK organization, Parent Institute for Quality Education. And in our opening segment, David, we were talking about the whole idea of a group of people who came together and were listening to parents in a school setting in San Diego, California. They were listening and attempting to learn what it was that they didn't know about why parents were not having the success with their children in the public education system that they wanted to have. And I want to go forward with that conversation, but I want to take another side of the issue. I want to have you talk to me a little bit about what it was that was a part of Wahak's thinking, meaning that he didn't just look around for what he didn't know. He looked around and attempted to hear what the people who did know, what did they know that the people, for example, the Anglo population. It reminded me of the technique that Jonas Salk used as he was searching for the cure for polio. He didn't look at people who were sick after a while. He started looking at people who were well. And what did people who were well do differently, or how were they different than people who were sick? And like any great scientist, Wahak would have been a social scientist in that regard, and Dr. Ochoa, yourself, all the people together looked for what the people who were doing well, what did they know, and how can we help our populations that aren't doing as well? How can we help them do better? Would that be fair to say?
Yes, yes. And I think what Wahak shared with us early on was that in all the work that he did in Los Angeles, he became aware of why certain families were having a lot of success in making the school system work very effectively for their children. When he sat and listened to the parents at Sherman Elementary during those 9 weeks of discussions, he became very aware of the fact that parents didn't even know how to interpret a report card, let alone how to assess a state test or know what kind of classes their children needed to take. So it really became apparent that what the parents needed most was basic information and then skills and everything that goes with it to learn how to apply that information to help their children and advocate on behalf of their children in an effective and constructive way. And so that was his realization in having these dialogues and discussions with parents. And it was from those discussions that Alberto was able to develop the first curriculum. And since then it has evolved. We now have over 35 different curriculums that we've used with parents as we've learned from them the things that they needed in order to help their children.
Well, here's an interesting thought. It wasn't just what they didn't know about school. It also related to a cultural phenomenon of the raising of the child and the creation of a home environment. Would that be fair to say?
Absolutely. And that's why half of our curriculum focuses at the home environment. How do we as parents create a learning environment that stimulates, promotes, and creates high and reasonable expectation for our children? And he knew that the parents are the ones that plant those seeds, water them, and so we needed to have parents take up that role in the home and then come into the school and work effectively with educators.
Was it about what they bought for the kids, the toys, the things that they paid for, or was it about learning a new language of how to talk to their children?
Yeah, all of that. And what Wahak often has said to us, children learn more from what they see their parents do than what they hear their parents say. And we as parents often think we just have to keep lecturing our children. But Vahak basically was telling parents, you must model the behavior that you want your children to have. If you want your children to read, you must bring magazines and books into the home. And if you can't, if for any reason, and it's not the parents' fault if they're illiterate, and we make sure and let them know that, it is the system's fault of wherever they came from that did not give them the reading skills and the literacy skills, but they can still sit with their children and have their children read to them. And so they can still play a very important part in the reading development of their children. And we all know that reading is the basis of a quality education.
Isn't it kind of a promotion of the idea of, rather than saying, well, I don't know it or understand it, therefore you can't know it or understand it. Maybe I don't have experience with it, but I can help you get the help you need, and you can do it because you're capable, and we're in an environment and in a system that supports me to help you have what you need.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so I know that you created that, and I know many, many instances, the stories or legend about how you've inspired people to come and be part of the schools. And I think that all too often we forget how parents are primary caregivers. You know, we'll tell children, well, you're too dumb, you can't get this. I mean, I had it happen in college where I was taking a class, and after going to the teacher about three times, I swear this is absolutely the case. She looked at me square in the face and she said, has it ever occurred to you, you're simply too dumb to understand this? And I looked at her and I thought, how can you possibly say that to me? Look at what I know. And yet from her perspective, it was one that said, well, the fact that you don't understand three or four times after I've explained it to you, therefore means there must be something wrong with you. But I had parents, and especially my dad, who simply said, if you don't understand it, just keep asking until you do. That's not about coming from a moneyed background, because I didn't. It was coming from an attitude of certainty that the answer was there if you continued to search. And that's the impression that I've gotten from all of the material and all the work that PK does. And I'm very, very, very supportive of that position. But
I mentioned one thing, Elaine.
Sure.
Could I mention one thing?
Go ahead.
What is very important for parents to understand is that, and we found this a lot in the Latino culture primarily, where what you said earlier about telling a child you're dumb, you're incapable of doing that, we let the parents know that you are setting an expectation for your children, and never, and I hate to use the word never, but never should you use words that demean your child, because even if it's done in jest, it is damaging to your children. If there's issues that your children don't know and that you're not aware of, we let the parents know. There are programs in the schools, in the community, in the churches, all around you, where it's your responsibility as a parent to know that those programs exist and to get your children exposed to them so they can broaden their exposure into, let's say, like right now, PK is in the process of developing a STEM curriculum. We're going to develop a science, technology, engineering, and math curriculum for parents so that there are things that they can do at home or they can take their children to places in the community, museums, laboratories, where their children can get exposed to things that they normally wouldn't get exposed to. And so we know that as parents, we're the ones that have to plant the seed, and we have to give our children a great deal of support and love to let them know that they can accomplish anything they set their minds to.
I think that that's very important and very significant, because all too often they don't have the language for how to do that. They simply don't know that you don't tell people how awful they are in order to get them to do something. In fact, that has the very effect you're afraid of, and that is convinces them that they are dumb. And I think that one of the things that's real important that PK has helped people learn to understand to do is navigate the school system. But what we want to expound on in our next segment here is the whole idea of navigating the community system. There's a whole curriculum built around teaching parents how to use the resources that are available to them. We'll be right back.
The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce by Rick Stevens and Elaine Scott, is winning accolades as an accessible business novel with a striking new perspective about community collaboration and workforce development for the 21st century. In the book, community leaders in the fictional town of Chantilly learn why they must think and act differently to build a sustainable workforce for the future. Real stakeholder leaders from around the country have used the book as a model for their own communities. Vicki Hogan is president and CEO of the Vermilion Advantage in Danville, Illinois. She and the Vermilion team have been collaborating with Birth to Work to implement the strategies outlined in the system.
Your book is really incredible. It's like a roadmap that in story form really sheds the light on a national issue and makes it obvious in a story form who the key stakeholders really have to be to create sustainability.
Sustainable results will only come from collaboration, alignment, and integration of the people, programs, and ideas of a unified community. The system, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, shines a light on the challenges that communities across the country are facing right now and the forces that drive and influence people's behaviors. Stakeholder leaders such as Angela Phillips-Diaz are using the book as a guide for effective stakeholder action. In her work with the University of California, Riverside, she's charged with improving the college-going rate in the region.
I literally have the book on my desk and use it as a reference tool all the time. It's been invaluable to me.
This system, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, is the guide for stakeholder leaders who want to do business as usual in a new way. Buy it today at birthtowork.org or amazon.com.
And welcome back. This is such an exceptional conversation because we have a rare opportunity to talk with David Valladolid of the Parent Institute for Quality Education. We're talking about a program whose basic mission statement is to bring schools, parents, and community together as equal partners in the education of every child to provide all students with the option and access of a post-secondary education, which would seem like a lofty statement to many people, which in fact is a statement of shared accountability and a common responsibility for having kids be able to go into post-secondary education for the future. And we would like to talk a little bit about this whole idea of going beyond navigating the system to actually developing the program that results in collaboration of teachers and counselors and principals. Tell us a little bit about that, David, and when you're looking at a school and putting a they've invited you to come and consider putting your program in. What are some of the things that you go do in that environment?
Well, our executive directors in each of our regions will set up appointments with a principal. We do not go into a school where the principal and the leadership at that school is not inviting us. We don't necessarily go to the superintendent level and try to get it imposed on schools, because we found that when the leadership at the school is not something that they want, a program like BK, that it doesn't work. We need to have buy-in at the school level. And so the director will go meet with the principal and basically establish a memorandum of understanding. And that will include that the school will provide meeting space for the classes, and our classes are held an hour and a half, one day a week. And depending on the number of parents that we're able to recruit, the classes range from 25 to 30 parents for each class. So if we get a couple hundred parents at the school, we're going to have 5-6 classes going on, and we teach the classes Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays of the week. The other things the principal will agree to do is to provide childcare, light refreshments. Come to on the 8th week, we have a principal's dialogue with the parents, so the principal will agree to attend that 2-hour session with the parents. And then on the 9th week, we have the graduation, where the parents will receive their certificates of completion, and we get to hear very powerful testimonies. Each class will designate one parent to share with everyone in the auditorium what they learned and how they plan to apply this new knowledge to help their children get to college. And so that is the basics for establishing the program. The school then will give us a list of every parent at that school, their name, address, phone number, and the primary language that's spoken in the home, so that our recruiters that are other parents that graduated from PK that we hire to do our recruitment, they will take that list and we'll give them 100 names. They'll take them home, and over a 2-week period, they'll call those parents and tell them that they're calling on behalf of the principal to invite them to attend classes that are going to give them all the information they need to help their children get a good education and someday have the option of a college education. And so that's the basic elements of the program that we implement, and then we stay with that for 9 weeks up until the graduation, and then we celebrate the parents with their children, and their grandparents and their friends are all in the auditorium. And so they're just very beautiful celebrations of parents who have worked very hard, sometimes multiple jobs, but still come that evening of the class in order to help their children. And they have shown us that for all parents, an education is important for their children. And so they have removed all
and
this.
And so parents do come, parents do participate, and the supposition that they won't is really more in the eyes and ears and hearts of the administrators who tell you that they won't come, rather than the fact that they will if they're given the opportunity in a
sure.
form that works for them. Is that correct?
Sure. And last year we graduated 92% of the parents that started the program finished it. But let me say, some of the things that we have learned over our 22 years is that you just can't expect that the parents are going to show up. We ask our facilitators, in fact, we require them, the night before each class, they have to personally talk to every parent that's attending their classes and let the parents know a couple of the areas and subjects that will be discussed the following day and stress how important their presence and participation will be, because our classes are not lecture mode. They are participatory, discussion, dialogue, question-based. And so this is the way we have learned that if the facilitator does not call their parents, about half won't show up. Not that they don't care. It's just that they're so overwhelmed with everything. But if they tell the facilitator, I'll be there, you know, 90-plus percent of the time, they will show up.
Well, these are people, as I understand it, sort of like Weight Watchers. They've been through the program themselves.
Yes. All our facilitators are PK graduates. And the five criteria that Vahak likes to say we look for in a facilitator is, one, they are a parent, so they're not teaching parents in the abstract. But these are not setting concrete. We have some excellent facilitators that are not parents, but most are. Two, that they be a college graduate so that they be a model for the parents. Again, not all our facilitators are college graduates, but most, 90 probably percent are. Three, that they know how to shut up, because teaching is listening and listening is teaching. And so we ask the facilitator, you're going to be there with the parents for 90 minutes. You impart information for 45, and you listen for 45. And as Vahak said, or I stated earlier, he said, the parents will learn as much from you as you learn from them. So we're asking our facilitators, take off the degrees, the titles, your income, and be as equals with these parents. And you hold the high expectations that these parents have the full capability to learn everything they must learn to help their children. And believe deeply that these parents want to help and see their children succeed.
So you're essentially asking these facilitators to model for the parents exactly the way they want parents to model for their children.
Absolutely.
They mirror.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
You had tremendous success in San Diego, in Southern California. How is the receptivity of PK in other states around the United States?
Well, in California, we have 10 regional offices and 3 satellite offices. We entered into a very historic agreement with the California State University System, and now several of the CSU colleges offer us office space so that, because we don't have offices in their region, they give us a satellite office so we can have somebody working from there. In the other states, we first expanded into Texas, very well received, into Dallas, Texas. We're currently opening up a new office in Houston. We're in the process of working with Houston Unified School District to open up a new office at one of the community colleges there that's going to incubate us for 5 years. Last year, a couple of years ago, we opened up an office at ASU, Arizona State University. Through the Center of Economic Development and Civil Rights, they brought us to Arizona and had us, we're incubating the program there for 5 years at Arizona State University. Last year, we opened an office at George Mason University in Virginia. They, again, have given us a 5-year incubation period in order to establish the program. Everywhere it's being set up, it's being very well received. It's having a great deal. In Arizona, in the first 2 years, they graduated 7,000 parents. They now call it the American Dream Academy because it's part of a host of programs that the center at the university is offering to the community. We've done best practices on 6 Indian reservations in Montana, Crow and Cheyenne, and then we've done 2 best practice models in Worthington and Minneapolis, Minnesota. And again, with incredible success, not the high numbers, but in terms of the quality of the program and in terms of the way it's been received. In Minneapolis, now I'll be heading out there in a few weeks to spend some time because they now want to do, rather than a best practice, they want to implement a replication model of PIQUE. They call it, in Montana, they call it PASS, Parents of Academically Successful Students. And in Minnesota, they've called it SAPEO, Connecting Parents to Educational Opportunities. But they're so excited about the impact of the program on 5 different language communities there in Minneapolis that they've asked us to come back to do a new replication model, and they want PIQUE to be a setup in Minneapolis. And then 2 of the incredible women that work there in the district have plans to try to see it expand around the state.
Do you partner with other people other than universities?
Yes, we have. We've partnered with school districts. See, if you go on our website, we offer 3 different forms of consultation. One is simply to school districts. We do a 2-day training. The best practice is a 1-year contract that we stay with the organization for up to a year to help them learn all the dynamics of implementing the program. And then a replication model is the ones we've done in Texas, Arizona, and Virginia. Those are complete 2-year contracts that are full replications of the program.
When we come back, I want you to talk a little bit about how do I know if I need this program or if my school is a good candidate for bringing this program in. We'll be right back. Well, this has just been extremely, extremely valuable. I've got a nice clear picture of the program and the idea that it's applicable around the country. But I think one of the things that would be very, very wonderful for our listeners to know some of the stories of the success of the program and what it looks like when people succeed.
Absolutely, because it's the stories that we hear every 9 weeks that give us the injection that we need. Because this is very labor-intensive. We ask the people that work with PIQUE to travel long distances, to work long hours. It's not an 8-to-5 job. Sometimes they'll be working 12-hour work days. And I think the thing that gets people to do extraordinary things is to hear the stories that parents have shared with us throughout our history. I recall a superintendent in San Jose breaking down when he shared with the mayor of San Jose and I at the time that a father stood up at his PIQUE graduation and said, "I learned through PIQUE that I am the architect of my children's future, and I'll decide which bus they get on, the bus to work in the fields or a bus to a university, and I declare tonight my children will be on a bus to a university." I remember another father in Sacramento sharing with us at the graduation that his children had got him together the week before and basically asked him about their mother's illness and how serious was it. Was she going to die? And the father said, "What are you talking about?" And he says, "Well, Dad, ever since you guys started going to this PIQUE class, there's no more yelling or hitting going on, and we figured it was just probably somebody was sick or dying." And he says, "No, absolutely not. We have just learned more effective ways to deal with issues that come up in our families. And we've learned that not only from PIQUE, but from other parents that attend the classes of PIQUE, because we learn from each other." And it is those stories. I mean, one of the most beautiful stories was a mother called our office about 3 years ago here in San Diego and asked if she could know when the next PIQUE graduation was going on. And so she was told, "Well, ma'am, you need to go through 8 weeks of classes before you go to a graduation." And she informed our office that she had gone through PIQUE in 1990, and she wanted to share with people, other parents, what impact that it had on her family. And she shared a very difficult story about her family coming from Mexico to this country in 1987 with four children, her and her husband, living in a one-bedroom studio. And about a year after arriving here, the husband got into some problems and left. And the mother said, "I was in a total depression in a one-room studio with knowing that I didn't speak good English, I didn't know the school system, I didn't know how to help my children, I had nowhere to go back to, and here I had the lives of these four babies in my hands, ages 12 months to 12 years. And then her oldest son came home and said, 'Mom, there's a program at our school that will help you help us.' And she attended all the PICA classes, and when I sat with her and asked her, 'What did you learn and how did you apply it?' She said, 'Well, the first thing you told me is that if I left my children and went off to work, the streets would get them, because they were in a very violent, low-income, drug-infested community.' And so she stayed with her kids, and she went out to the neighborhood and recruited some children to do child care, to put food on her table. She went to the owner of the four-story apartment building and said, 'I'll clean the four stories if you let me have my studio for free,' and she got it. And then she shared with me how what she had learned in the PICA classes, that she needed to go to the school and ask for an interpreter, but that her job was to know every program, both sports, educational mentoring, tutoring, all the programs in the school and in the community that could help her children. And she showed me a file about 2 inches thick of her four children's last 12 years of achievements in everything from sports to school activities, et cetera. And at the end, she shared with us the results. Her oldest son had graduated from San Diego State and was now doing his PhD in physics. Her daughter was doing mechanical engineering at Cal State San Marcos. Her third daughter had a learning disability, so she said, I focused most of my time on her because she had these disabilities. She graduated from high school. I got her into a community college. She couldn't handle the rigor of the community college, so I got her into an ROP program, and she's now working in an assistant nursing program. The fourth child, I was invited to do a keynote address at a graduation in that community at a community program, and the fourth child was present, and he introduced himself to me, and he had just completed his first year of a four-year scholarship to Notre Dame. So this mother, with no resources to speak of, took what she learned in the PICA classes and applied them so effectively that all her children were being successful in their lives. And she was giving thanks and giving so much attention and tribute to PICA for helping her family change the rest of their lives. And so these are just some of the incredible stories that we've got to hear from the parents as they tell us. And we know that when parents know their children are in an academic crisis, they will move mountains to help their children and to get their children to obtain a good quality and post-secondary education.
I know myself in the number of environments that I've worked in, all too often there's a kind of agreed mentality that people won't show up. And my own experience is like yours in the school system, is that there needs to be a safe environment. And when the schools collaborate and the community collaborates, you can move mountains and you can make changes. So I think that's an incredible testimony to people who came in not looking, as I mentioned in the opening, not for who to blame, but how do I listen differently to hear what it is that people need to know. And
yeah,
my sense here is that lots of people now are listening to what you're saying, and they would ask themselves, is my campus, my school environment, a good place for this program? What would they need to know to answer that question?
If they feel they need to have more information, then all they need to do is ask their principal, would you bring a program like PICA? And there's other programs around the country in many areas that offer this kind of information, this kind of classes. And so they just need to do their research. But PICA is someday going to be a national model. We have about 6 or 7 other states right now inviting us to set programs up. We're doing it slowly, so that we ensure that the quality of the program is never compromised as we make our commitment to reach every parent in our nation and even outside of our nation. I'm now being invited to other countries to bring PICA because it's a universal concept that every parent needs to know how to create those good learning environments at home, how to go into the schools and partner with educators to make sure their children get an education. I've been asked many times, if I had a magic wand, what would I do to address the crisis in education? And it always comes down to one word for me, and that is expectation. What do we as parents create in the home in terms of expectations? And then what do the teachers, educators, and the schools, how do they view our children when they come into the schools? And if we as the parent is there to introduce our child to the teacher and say, my daughter or my son will go to college someday, I need you to promise me that you will do everything possible and let me and keep me informed on what you want me to do in the home to make that possible, the teacher will never again see that child the same. And so we get to change that expectation.
At Birth to Work, we have exactly the same phenomenon that we address on a community level, and we fall directly in line with the nature of your program and what you do. But I want to say something a little bit differently than what you just said. You don't offer parents more information. That's a small part of what you do from where I sit, because it's the same kind of thing that we look at in a community. PK offers schools and communities and families a process by which they can integrate a social, emotional, home, community, family approach to raising the expectations of possibility for the success of their children, the success of their family within the context of schools and communities. And that is precisely and exactly what we do with Birth to Work. We reach beyond the boundaries of the school setting and the family setting into the community and wind that community around the schools. I think the message you have brought us is one of excitement. It's practical. And it's one that is going to take us directly into the future, because it was based originally on the belief that people can and will do better if they are invited to do so in a meaningful and a thoughtful way that is not based, again, on who to blame, but how to do my part. And I think that that is a giant contribution to this country and to who and where we are.
So we have to work with educators and everyone in our community. You're absolutely right. This is not just about, and I often tell potential funders, we offer the best anti-poverty, anti-crime program in the nation, and we offer preparing our children for a brighter future for if they don't have a quality and post-secondary education as we move into this 21st century, what chances will they have to lead productive and secure lives?
The Parent Institute for Quality Education is a class organization, a championship story, and one that produces champions at every level. Tell our listeners how to get a hold of you.
One of the easiest ways is on the computer. If you just Google PIQE, four letters, PIQE, that is the Parent Institute for Quality Education. You can find all the information, and we're right now redoing our website, and hopefully it's going to be a vast improvement over the one we have now. But it's going to be able to give people from all around the country information on how to access our program, how to contact us. Our phone number at our corporate headquarters is 858-483-4499. And they can reach me at that number. And we look forward to be working with families all over our nation to make sure that our children have a brighter future and hope.
You will be supported by Birth to Work, and we'll talk again next week.
Thank you so much, Elaine.
Thank you for joining us on Birth to Work Radio. For more information about Birth to Work, to stream or download podcasts of archived radio programs, or to purchase a hard copy or downloadable version of Rick and Elaine's book, The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, please visit our website at birthtowork.org. That's birth, the number two, work.org. We invite you to send us your feedback and questions directly by emailing info@birthtowork.org. Birth to Work Radio, the voice of community stakeholder leaders.